I'd like to call to order the February 12th, 2013 session of the House Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources. We are in session. Good morning to all of you. We have several bills that we're going to be hearing today. The first one, I'd like to open a public hearing on House Bill 2700. And thank everyone who will be appearing today. I'd like to call forward first, please, Representatives Buckley and Esquivel, and Representative Clem may be joining us here shortly. So
one never knows, Mr. Chair.
Gentlemen, welcome to our committee.
Good morning, Chair Witt, members of the committee. I'm Representative Peter Buckley, representing South Jackson County in the legislature. I'm joined by my colleague, Representative Esquivel, who also represents a hunk of Jackson County legislature. We're here in support of this bill. We appreciate your hearing it and your consideration of it. Something quite remarkable is happening in Jackson County, and I have no doubt it's happening around the state. There's a new generation of people moving into agriculture. They're moving into the business of agriculture with energy, with new ideas, and I think the future is tremendously bright. They are organizing what they grow, where they grow, how they sell it locally, and the idea of having fresh Oregon food available for Oregon consumers is what fuels them in their work. The bill we're bringing before you today is a boost. It's an economic boost for the agricultural industry, particularly for farmers who are getting into the business now. And there's a number of people here testifying on behalf of this today. It's a great idea. This idea has worked in other states. How it works in Oregon, really, I have to admit, I'm kind of throwing at in your lap to try to figure out how to best make it work in Oregon. But I hope that you'll agree with me that this is an excellent idea. It's fiscally responsible. It's a good positive economic development and will help this next generation of farmers take root in our state. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Our esteemed Vice Chair, Representative Esquivel.
For the record, Sal Esquivel, Representative District 6, Medford. And that is a big part of Jackson County. On this Aggie bonds is what we're discussing here. I don't think it's a matter of it working or not working. It's a matter of who's going to administer it. Mm-hmm. I think that's the big question. Does that go under economic development? Does it go under business development? Or does it go into the agricultural community and the department itself? You know, that's the big question here. And I think we should probably, I would recommend, Chair Witt, that we have a kind of a work group eventually to sort that out and figure out, lock them in a room and let them come out and decide who's going to do what, when, where, why, and how, and answer that question for us as a committee. I think we can go forward with this, and I think it will be beneficial not only to everyone in Jackson County, but also to everyone in the state of Oregon, and I think that it would be a great benefit to us as a state.
Well, gentlemen, thank you very much for bringing this bill forward. It is, as you have characterized it, just a tremendous idea, and I think will be a large boost for our state's economy, for agriculture in our state, and provide several opportunities for people who are trying to enter the agricultural field. With that, are there questions or comments for our colleagues this morning? Not seeing any. Thank you very, very much for your testimony. Certainly appreciate it. With that, I'd like to call up, please, Lisa Hansen. I think I made a mistake. Stand at ease.
First time.
He's like, wow, is this a surprise? Excuse me, I'm sorry. I get the right witness sheet here. With that, I'd like to call up, please, Ivan Molesky. And Ivan, if you have anyone that you'd like to bring up with you, please have them come up as a panel. While they're coming up, I also want to make note that we have received written statements for Cassandra Griffin from Upstream Public Health, Carrie Sendek, individual farmer, Rebecca Thistlewaite, from author of Farms with a Future, Creating and Growing a Sustainable Farm Business. Andy Westland, Board of Directors of a number of agricultural companies. Mike Salvaggio from the Oregon State Treasury, and I'm sure that's not an exhaustive list, but only the ones that I've gotten to in my email. With that, gentlemen, welcome to our committee, and please proceed.
Chair Witt, Vice Chairs Esquivel and McEwen, Ivan Molesky, Friends of Family Farmers based in Malala, Oregon. Thank you very much for having this hearing today. It's exciting. It's an exciting opportunity for rural economic development across the state. In addition to some of the folks you mentioned there, Chair Witt, I know that Gary Stevenson from the OSU Small Farms Program has also submitted testimony, and the Northeast Oregon Economic Development District as well has shortly submitting testimony and support. And I've sort of asked these other two to come up, and they can introduce themselves, and perhaps this is our first panel. So again, thanks for your consideration of this bill. It would create a new, as written, it would create a new beginning and expanding farmer loan program to assist beginning farmers in securing access to capital for land, equipment, and depreciable agricultural property. It would house this at the Oregon Business Development Department, in part because they already do a lot of business loans and have some loans that could be made available for agricultural uses that we believe would be a nice consolidation of their ag lending program agency. Under this bill, such loans would be allowed for up to $250,000 for the purpose of purchasing depreciable agricultural property. This could include equipment like tractors or trucks, livestock, feed, seed, and fertilizer for any qualifying farmer. It would cover up to make eligible up to $62,500 on used equipment for first-time farmers, and up to $1,100 for farmland purchases. This would ultimately still be done through lending institutions, through qualify. If you have to be approved for a loan. This is not just giving away free money. Ultimately, Business Oregon's role is to help ensure that we're meeting the requirements set locally, so that the state doesn't accrue any liability. Ultimately, I'll let Jared talk to some of the technical pieces of this, how this works. But essentially, lowering lending costs to small farmers is really the purpose of this bill. It's to improve access to capital, to assist with cash flow and the ability to build equity while creating an economic multiplier effect in rural Oregon. When folks borrow this kind of money in order to either start or expand a small farm business, it means they're spending money at feed stores, at equipment dealerships, and livestock and seed suppliers typically in their communities. When a bank has a borrower who qualifies for a loan, the bank would apply to Business Oregon, which would review and approve the application, but not underwrite it nor incur any liability on behalf of the taxpayers. I would flag that 39 other states have very targeted ag lending programs. Oregon really does not. There's also 16 other states have this type of Aggie Bonds lending program, and Oregon would be well suited to join that list. This would essentially be a state and federal partnership, public-private partnership as well. It's a cost-effective way for Oregon to support beginning farmers and facilitate the growth in local market agriculture and address the issue of the aging farm population in the state, and allow create opportunities for younger people to, whether they're, and by younger I mean really under 50, get involved in agriculture and start taking over the next generation here. Now, I will pass it on, and thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much. Good morning.
Hi. For the record, my name is Jared Gardner. Thank you, Chair Witt and members of the committee, for this chance to give testimony. I have been on contract with Friends of Family Farmers to investigate the access to capital needs around the state, especially among smaller and newer farmers. And over a year ago in the interim session, we gave testimony kind of on a general issue of access to capital, and then again at this last interim on specifically on this Aggie Bond issue. We found throughout the state that, especially for smaller and newer farmers, many stories that were very similar around falling through the cracks between residential financing and commercial financing, maybe falling just outside the parameters of farm service agency, or otherwise having difficulty accessing the lowest possible cost financing. We found generally that the Federal Farm Service Agency is doing a good job of extending credit into areas where it's not been getting. But that said, there are still gaps. And many other states, I think as Ivan mentioned, 36 or so, have developed specific ag financing tools to address some of these gaps. And Oregon is not one of them, though for non-farm businesses, we do have a robust economic development agency. We just lack an ag-focused agency or ag-focused programs or ag-specialized lenders at the state level. Our research among other states led to this program, the Aggie Bond Program, and into relationship with other state agencies that could show us kind of how this works, how it's worked for other states, how it's self-funding in other states, and can provide the resources to extend more dollars into the farm sector. So this is a federal program. It's a tax program. It allows banks to get a federal tax exemption when they essentially lend to smaller and newer farmers for farmland purchase or any farmer for infrastructure, equipment, or breeding livestock. The premise here is that lower rate financing helps farmers build equity faster, and improved cash flows might allow them to get an additional operating line or other needs that can be served by improved financing. And by beginning farmer for the farmland portion, it covers a wide range of farmers across the state. That beginning farmer means you have not previously owned the farm you have operated. So you could own an ownership entity in your, say, your parents' farm, but when you go off and do your own venture, if you're leasing, you would still qualify to be able to buy your own farm. It also applies to existing farmers who have owned a small farm relative to the county. So out in eastern Oregon, we could be talking about 180 acres, 300 acres, even up to 700 acres in some counties would be considered small and eligible for extending this program. This legislation allows Oregon to tap into the federal allocations for these tax-exempt private activity bonds, and I think, as you've seen in Michael Salvaggio's testimony from Treasury, that Oregon has not been using its capacity, and if I understand right, we let expire over $100 million of capacity in 2012 alone. These bonds do not count against the state's bonding capacity, nor do they affect the state's credit rating. I know that's a concern. The process is much simpler than the other industrial development bonds that Business Oregon currently does. And so one of the questions is truly who will administer this? And so some of our thinking is that Business Oregon makes sense to do this. These are different, though, than what they currently do. In short, most of the work falls on the banks to do the initial credit risk assessment. Once they're committed to doing the loan, then they would forward an application up to the state, which would determine basically compliance, and then work with Treasury to allocate the funds. Banks retain all the credit risk, so the state is not liable for any of these loans. And other states have developed processes where they can approve 20 to 30 loans in an afternoon board meeting. So they're able to be pretty efficient on this. It's not as labor intensive as the other industrial bonds that the state does. Ivan mentioned some of the programs and the lending fees, lending amounts. On the farmland loans, they go up to $500,000 currently, and that is adjusted according to inflation. We all know that land prices are pretty high for farmland, and this is where some of the features start to shine, where these Aggie bonds can be used with farm service agency loans. So we can start to see total packages up to $1 million or so, which would bring the blended interest rates down into 3% for beginning farmers. So you've got this nice ability for banks to do the first part of the loan at fairly low rate, backed up by farm service agency loans on the second. Another scenario we've heard around the state is that when farmers fall just outside of FSA programs, say for instance that they have multiple business entities, say some off-farm income or a value-added business under a different business entity that they might bump out of some of the FSA programs, these are not requirements for this the Aggie Bond Program. So a bank could look globally at the entire cash flow picture of a farmer and say, okay, your loan package makes sense, and you will be materially farming on this property, and we can allow this program to work for you. So it does extend a little bit outside of FSA's parameters. And one of the consistent things we've heard around the state is that farmers who are living on the farm and working the farm often go to seek residential financing, which they cannot obtain because they're farming on the property. If they bump out of FSA for whatever reason, sometimes they can do it, sometimes they can't, they go to the commercial lender and rates are higher. That's where this program really kind of fits the niche, is that they bring the commercial rates down closer to residential financing. And for some of these larger loans, $400,000, $500,000, we can start to see savings in the $400 to $600 a month range, which starts to significantly add up and could make or break a small farm. Lastly, long-term, we hope that by having this program, which could be self-funding for both the program costs and the staffing costs, that having a dedicated ag lending specialist at Business Oregon could open the other programs they have up to farmers. They've done a few farm loans, not a lot, over the last few years, and it's our hope that by having an ag specialist there that we could tap into the credit enhancement fund or the capital access programs and start extending those dollars even further into the ag community. Again, thank you for the opportunity to give testimony, and we hope that Oregon can join the other states in having some state-level economic development tools for farmers.
Thank you very, very much. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Chair, and distinguished members of the committee. My name is Lynn Voigt. I'm a state executive director of the Farm Service Agency here in Oregon. And I wanted to take a few minutes to explain a little bit about our programs and how it might fit well with the proposed Aggie Bonds program. FSA, as you might know, administers both farm programs and farm loan programs to Oregon's agricultural sector. FSA's farm loan programs help beginning farmers get involved in agriculture. It helps established farmers stay involved in agriculture. And it helps, in some respects, the retiring generation move out of agriculture and others move in when the opportunity presents itself. As you well know, farming is a very capital-intensive venture. And the biggest challenge for many beginning farmers is just getting access to that capital that's needed and access to farmland to begin their farming operation. For us, we're doing our very best to help younger persons and beginning farmers get involved in agriculture. This last year, for example, about 45% of all the dollars we lent directly in agriculture went to what we qualify as beginning farmers, and that's those who have been involved in agriculture 10 years or less. And we're very proud of our assistance in doing so. In terms of how we operate, we have both guaranteed loan programs where we guarantee loans that other lending institutions make. We guarantee them up against loss, and we make loans ourselves on a direct loan basis. One of the things that we can do the very best is leverage with other lenders in helping the agricultural sector. We partner with other people. We don't have enough appropriations to be able to fill the needs of agriculture all by ourselves. So it's important that we always work with someone else. For example, our direct down payment loan program for beginning farmers offers a situation where another lender could offer up to 50% or more of the purchase price of a piece of property, with FSA then falling behind that in the second or junior lien position to fill out another 45% of the purchase price, with the actual purchaser of the land then fulfilling the remaining portion of it with a 10% down payment. That program works extremely well, but it's dependent upon another lender helping out in the first lien position, that prior lien position. And the Aggie Bonds program seems to be a perfect fit for that kind of partnering. And it would enable us to make our loans go a little bit further, help more people. The other thing that's nice about it, has already been said, is the advantage of an interest rate break. Interest costs for a newer beginning farmer are going to be fairly significant. They're going to be carrying a highly leveraged debt load. And the less cost that can be associated with agriculture is going to be an advantage to them, helping them withstand adverse times that will come at some point in time. But that slower cost of interest is going to be an advantage. FSA is a federal agency, and as such, we are dependent each year on annual appropriations. Sometimes, especially during times when we have a continuing resolution, the funding isn't as dependable as what we might like. When there are short-term continuing resolutions, our funding is on again, and then it's off again, and it's on again, and it's off again. That makes it very, very difficult. When the timing of things aren't quite relaxed, or quite like it should be, people aren't able, sellers of real estate aren't able to be as patient for funding as what people might like. For beginning farmers, a lot of them take over family farms that are within the family, but a whole lot don't. A whole lot depend upon purchasing or gaining access to agriculture from someone else. Having the Aggie Bonds program there on a more dependable basis, perhaps, than FSA, is going to be an advantage to help them meet those timing requirements. The Aggie Bond program also is going to be an extremely good complement, we believe, to one of our agency's newer loan programs, and that's our microloan program. The microloan program is right new to us. It's a $35,000 loan program, $35,000 or less. It's for the very smallest and those who are just beginning involved, getting involved in agriculture. And it's for operating expenses, for annual operating expenses, for the purchase of capital assets that are needed for production. And it's going to be a good complement, we believe, with the Aggie Bonds program. There's going to be a fairly high demand for these loans, we know already. The nice thing is that if, for example, the Aggie Bonds program can be used to finance the capital purchases, the capital assets that are needed, the tractor, the breeding livestock and such, then it would leave FSA to be able to use our microloan program then to provide the annual operating expenses, the feed, seed, and fertilizer, rent on the cropland that's going to be rented. So it will allow us, again, to partner up, work together, and make the available funds go further to help more Oregonians this way. This is a great compliment for those people who are the very smallest, but perhaps those that are involved in production for the local food systems and such. A great way for people to get started, and then over time, scale up to the point where they can be involved more directly in what we might think of as production agriculture. We've got a unique situation in agriculture right now, and I'm sure you're well aware of it. We've got an older generation that is positioned now to begin looking for ways to gracefully exit agriculture. We know that, for example, in the next 10 years, over the next decade, we're going to be in a situation where about 70% of our nation's agricultural assets are going to be transferring from one generation to another. The younger generation is looking for a way to get into farming for the first time, and The Aggie Bonds program provides an opportunity, we think, to help make that transition a reality and serve Oregon agriculture very well. So we look forward to the opportunity of working with the Aggie Bonds program for the benefit of Oregon agriculture. Mr. Chair, thank you so much for the opportunity to speak today.
Thank you very, very much for your very fine testimony. And I think it's important to note that how significant this is in helping to aid transferring our agricultural lands to the next generation. Questions or comments for our panel? First, Representative Krieger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we all appreciate family farms, the rural culture, and they pass it down from generation. But today in my area, South Coast, the Coquille Valley, Bandon, the Cranberry people, I hear that even today, those that don't have the mortgage on the land, they've owned the land, it's been passed down or they bought it years ago, is becoming less and less viable to own ag land, that you can't really get the return off of it and make a living. And I would suggest probably if you look down there, the majority of those people have an outside job. And so I'm trying to figure how you could have a mortgage on land and be viable. You've got new rules, new regulations, 325 new EPA regulations that we don't even all know about. DEQ, there's no end to it. This year, Mr. Chair, I haven't looked at all of them, but the water bills we've got today in this building, if you pass half of those, none of these would be viable that you're trying to have, and half the ones that are already existing probably couldn't comply with it all and exist. So I like the concept, But at the same time we're doing this, we've got other people in the building proposing bills that make it almost impossible to achieve it in rural communities. And if you look where those people are from, they're not from the rural legislators. So there's a total disconnect between what we do in rural America to produce food and our culture and all the things we do, then the metro areas. So how would a bank, when you give a loan, as part of the business plan, look at the increasing bureaucracy and rules as to how that would affect the viability? How do they calculate that in? With all this new stuff coming down they have to comply with that takes part of the profit that land might be able to produce. Do they look at that?
That's a good question for hopefully some of the representatives from the Bankers Association. What I can say with the Aggie Bond program is that it is intentionally designed to allow off-farm income to be calculated into the debt repayment plan, and so that's a different feature for this program than some of the other programs out there. And so in that sense, it's taken into account.
Representative Unger.
Thank you, Chair. This is a question for the panel and also maybe for Vice Chair Esquivel. There was talk about, there's been some uncertainty about maybe how this will get implemented. And I heard the panel mention that, and I heard that from the Vice Chair as well. Is this bill ready to go as it is, or does it actually need more work before we're ready to pass it?
Chair Witt, Representative Unger, from our perspective, it's pretty darn close. I think that we've offered to we haven't heard any objection from Business Oregon, but I'm sure they have some technical amendments that clarify how their role. I understand the Treasury has a technical amendment or two as well that clarify their role. So I think that we can iron these things out. I think that we're very close, and we can we're happy to sit down with anyone to work out those kinks. And I think the major pieces are in place, and it's really just some of those. So those technical pieces.
Can I ask the same question to the Vice Chair? Is that your understanding as well?
Sure. And sure. Mr. Chair and Representative Unger, sometimes you have situations where people can't iron things out, so that's why we become the iron.
Fair enough. Thank you. Thanks.
Representative Whitsitt.
Chair Witt. I was wondering if you have a limit on the outside income that you're going to allow for these loans so that we don't end up loaning professional basketball players $500,000 to start up a little farm somewhere.
So there's two checks, Representative, what's that? There's two checks in this. One is that the community bank needs to do their own credit analysis to make sure this is a viable just the loan will be repaid. The second is that as the application is forwarded to the agency for approval, that there's some common sense in that this is for aiding beginning farmers in farming. And so there is a dialogue point at that point to make sure that the funds are being used. And again, there's not credit liability to the state, but I share your concern that we're not just giving to somebody who wants to have a rural lifestyle and maybe plant a couple plants out there to get some lower rate financing. They have to, by IRS definition, they have to be materially farming. They have to be an operator, classified as an operator of the farm.
Could I follow up? So on their tax form, that is their primary occupation. You know how you have to write what is the primary occupation on the bottom of your, when you sign your name to your
the
tax
IRS
form?
Does not have that as a criterion for this. That would be the primary that because I do believe that if you made more money off farm income then your tax preparer might put that on, or you might list that as your primary occupation, or a bank might see that as the primary, but you are materially farming in this.
Okay.
Additional questions or comments? Yes, Representative Klum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yesterday I met with Will Harris from their association with some of the ag lenders on the bill, and they had some questions that you know, for example, or the things we could learn from other states are already doing it as we set it up, about, you know, how many loans it takes before they became self-funded, stuff like that. And so I took a little list of questions that I'll share with the folks that I've been working with in the interim, along with my co-sponsors, to get this bill ready. And I think there's at least one technical amendment from Treasury. I've asked the, I think I had submitted it, and then I called down there and said, let's wait till after the hearing and see what else there might be, because I think I've got even a few wording changes in it, one section up in the top part. So it's not quite ready to go yet, but close.
Very good. Gentlemen, I think it's worth noting that your bill was selected as the first bill our committee would hear. It was selected by myself and both of our vice chairs. In addition, if you consider the number of our committee members who are sponsoring this piece of legislation, you'll see that it is considered very important by this committee. I want to thank you ever so much for all of your work in putting the bill together and bringing it forward. Thank you very, very much for those efforts, and thank you for your testimony this morning.
Thank you.
Representative Klim, I don't want to put you on the spot, but I also want to give you an opportunity, if you'd like, either here from the dais or at the witness chair, to make comments if you'd like.
No, I'm okay. I'm sure everybody can handle it.
All right.
I've said lots on this topic.
Thanks very much.
Thank you, though.
I'd like to call up next, please, Rebecca Landis. And if, as I call witnesses up, if you have anyone that you would like to join you, please feel free with that as well. Good morning, and
good morning.
Welcome to our committee.
Yeah, honored to be part of the first bill. Chairman Witt, members of the committee, I'm here to support passage of HB 2700 on behalf of the Oregon Farmers Markets Association, and which is part of the Oregon Grows Partnership. I'm sure you heard about that earlier. And I'm also the market director for Corvallis Albany Farmers Markets. Before I start my testimony, I want to point out, having represented small farmers for a long time, I certainly hear the concerns about off-farm income. But I always like to point out that in the Midwest, where farms are larger and often supported by federal programs that my farmers will never see a dime of, those families also need off-farm income. And one of the primary reasons they need that is so that they can have health insurance. So I don't really feel that the size of farm or the type of farm have a whole lot to do with that conundrum. That's kind of outside our parameters for today. Obviously, I'm not an expert on healthcare. Okay. So I've been managing farmers markets since 1995, and I would say in the last 5 years, I've kind of seen a surge of interest in farming from young people who are not from farm families and thus do not have the ready access to suitable land and equipment. I've been impressed with the level of business acumen and agricultural knowledge I've seen these young people, even without having the farm upbringing. And for the record, I didn't see a cow till I was in second grade. Mm-hmm. But there's really little I can do as a farmer's market manager to assist the launch of these agricultural businesses until they can secure the land. There are young people who have family resources to tap, but most find themselves asking community banks, and for a variety of reasons that are not always the fault of the borrowers, as in no business plan, that sort of thing, too few are getting to yes. And we do hear, as you've heard earlier today, that some banks are simply not willing to lend to us. Small ag or maybe even large ag. A would-be farmer can get only so far by maxing out their credit cards, and of course that's not an advisable business plan. Other small Oregon small farms have managed to get started, and so we have some out there with viable business plans, a start on their business, but they really can't expand for want of capital. They might need more land than they have. They might need some equipment to add value to the crops that they're raising. And then we get to discussion of federal grants, and I'm not an expert on that either, but I do know that the value-added producer grant, which is one of the most common ones we talk about, is not for acquisition of some of the things that we are needed here. I'm not saying it's not a good thing, but it just doesn't solve the problem that HB 2700 gets at better. Ag entrepreneurship at the local level has already done a lot to strengthen local economies in Oregon, and HB 2700 could move the state further along in this direction. Farmers markets are now opening up in smaller communities than I ever dreamed possible. And I just want to kind of get this down to brass tacks for you. If you're in a really small rural community where every single person in the community has to go outside that community for for many miles just to get groceries. And then suddenly there's a local farmer's market there, and they're new and small farms from the area, and they're selling food to their neighbors. You can really imagine how that multiplier effect gets really impressive, because you're starting from nothing in the way of the food economy there. The Agibonds approach offers some additional security for the banks, which benefit, as you heard, from the federal tax exemptions on the interest. And then, of course, there's the promise of the better rates for the farm borrowers. It does really, I'm excited about the Business Oregon part of this thing, too, how it extends the reach of Business Oregon into the small farm sector in really positive ways. And then we know now that Business Oregon has some qualifying assistance that's not in this bill already that we could tap into the loan guarantee and loan loss reserve fund. So I feel like we have a fiscally sound mechanism in HB 2700. We're tapping unused capacity in Oregon's potential pool of federally tax-exempt loans. Our startup cost is low, especially when it's compared with the potential benefits to local economies and our food systems. So thank you very much for this opportunity to testify in support of HB 2700.
Thank you very, very much. Questions or comments for Ms. Landis? Yes, Vice Chair McEwen, please.
Chair Witt, just a comment. We are one of those rural communities that has benefited greatly from a burgeoning farmers market. It started a few years ago, and every Wednesday morning it is absolutely jam-packed. And it's something new to our area down on the South Coast, and I just want to thank you for the good work that you do, and it's been a great benefit to the citizens of our community.
Well, thank you. It's just I'm always amazed that we get calls, and I'm currently president of the statewide association. I'm going to be giving that up here pretty soon, but I field a lot of the calls and the emails, and I'm really impressed by the initiative and drive of people in these communities to make it happen in places that people would have said before that it couldn't happen, but they make it happen. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anything further for our witness?
Thank you for letting me testify.
Thank you very, very much. Appreciate your comments. Next, I'd like to call up, please, Michael Guibert. And if I have botched your name, thank you. And Kate Sherman, please. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you. Thank you, members of the committee, Chair Witt, for this opportunity. So I'm going to talk a little bit of support for what you've already heard. So my name is Michael Guibert, and with my wife Linda, we own and operate a small mixed livestock farm in Corbett called Terra Farma. And we've managed to build quite a successful direct-to-consumer farm operation with many, many loyal customers, mostly from the Portland area, who are thrilled to have access to pasture-raised eggs, chickens, turkeys, pigs, and milk. But due to some restrictive lending practices, I mean, it almost never happened. When we originally planned on moving that to Corbett in 2001, we fell in love with a 10-acre property with an old farmhouse on it and initiated the process to purchase it. At the time, we were vegetarians and had no intentions of farming, other than having a large garden for ourselves. However, when we were at the title company, we got a call at the last minute as we were about to sign our names, and the loan company realized that our property was more than 5 acres and that didn't meet their guidelines, and the deal was off. So fortunately, we had a really good mortgage broker, and he was able to find us a new loan, and we bought the property in December 2001. So after several years passed, our diets changed. We started with a few hens, followed shortly thereafter by some goats, broilers, turkeys, pigs, and the fears that our first lender had come true. We were using our farm to grow food. So at first we started just as a hobby operation, you know, selling to a few coworkers and friends and not really making any profit at all. But then, you know, things really started improving, and we actually became an actual taxpaying business. But despite the demands of all these animals, we both of us still did have full-time jobs. And in 2011, we were hoping to take care of the low interest rates and refinance our house. And we were actually going to go through the same lender that was currently servicing our mortgage. And since we both had good jobs, stellar credit, and a long payment history with that company, we figured it was kind of a no-brainer. And it was, until the appraiser noted that we had income-producing livestock on our property. And again, we heard those words. That doesn't meet our guidelines. So they were happy to keep our loan at a higher rate, but the refinance was dead in the water. But despite these setbacks, the farm continued to grow and prosper. And we made the big decision to add a dairy cow to our farm, and we realized that we had to replace our aging barn, which was on the verge of falling down. So back to the mercy of lenders we went. This time, we went to our credit union in search of a home equity loan. And the same issues came up. So our options, we felt, were either lie to them, tell them we weren't farming, or get a commercial loan at a much higher rate, as you've heard. So we felt we couldn't afford the commercial interest rates. The interest would just be unbearable for us. So instead, we turned to those loyal customers and asked them to prepay for product over the next two-year period. And we weren't sure what to expect, but our customers came through. And we ended up with many thousands of dollars. And with that and a large chunk of our savings, we were able to build our barn. And now we're to the point where we're making maximum use of our 10 acres. And, you know, if our farm wants to grow any further, we're going to have to look at a bigger piece of property. And but given our financing difficulties in the past, I mean, I have very little hope that we could actually get a loan to buy a bigger property should we need one, since we are actual farmers now. And I also have concerns for other farmers that might be in that situation or maybe just starting out, that and they may not have a customer base like we do that would maybe help them out. So as we've experienced, their options would be pretty limited under the current regime. So enactment of HB 2700 would be a great benefit to many small farms in Oregon. And more customers are searching for Oregon-grown food, and there are many, many farmers that want to fill that niche but just are desperate for the opportunity to find land, and it's just exceedingly difficult. So please help this make this possible, and thank you for your time.
Thank you very, very much. Chairman.
Good morning, members of the committee, Chair Witt. I'm proud to say this is my first time giving testimony about legislation. My name's Kate Sherman. I believe I belong to the generation that's been mentioned over and over so far. I'm 27 years old, and my official title is Farmer Kate at Cauliflower Conspiracy. My partner and I farm 1.5 acres within the city limits of Portland, divided between three locations that we commute to. Food and water sustain life, and I'm proud to be in the business of producing food and stewarding land. We also have three children that we're teaching about where food comes from. I couldn't have been prouder when our 2.5-year-old son pointed to the bowl of green beans on our dinner table and said, "I grew these and I picked these." And of course, it was a bit of an exaggeration on his part, but even our youngest is making the connection between the land and the dinner table, and our older two girls enjoy small animals and spent a lot of last summer in bean teepees that they almost grew themselves, pretending to be nature fairies while the stinky grown-ups worked. I heard one fellow urban farmer comment recently about how his 14-year-old hesitates to help in their market garden because farming isn't cool. And we talked about making it our mission to make farming cool again, now that so few of us are in the business, although the numbers are growing again. For our children and generations to come. Of course, the serious mission behind this is to make sure there are young people to silo the know-how of growing food and carry it on. Currently at Cauliflower Conspiracy, we're in week 7 of a 13-week winter CSA that offers fresh produce and preserved goods, and I wanted to thank you and the rest of the legislature for the pickle bill and the chicken bill. The pickle bill has made our winter CSA possible, and while we're not making a profit from it, the membership dues ensure we can squeak by and have enough money for seed for spring and summer. The buzz created by the winter offerings has led many additional folks to inquire about getting in on next season's bounty, and I fervently hope we can oblige, but I'd like to explain some of the impediments, which you've already heard about some of them. The farmer's a dying breed, and without farmers, there are no food, and without diversity in the farming world, there's no food security, and that's why it's so important to pass bills like HB 2700, so those of us making farming cool again can provide food security to Oregon and have land we can confidently make long-term investments in and pass on to future generations. Right now, we farm on borrowed land that was purchased for development, and it's likely at the end of the coming growing season, the owner will kick us out. Therefore, we can't afford to invest in building the soil or in any infrastructure. We've already started the hunt for new land. HB 2700 is important for helping farmers find land and help keep current farmland in food production, protecting the food supply for all Oregonians. HB 2700 would also support organizations like Friends of Family Farmers, identify that aging farming generation without heirs in the business, and pair them with young landless farmers like myself, my partner, and our children who have know-how, determination, and muscle, but limited access to startup money. Everyone who starts their own business has dues to pay to build their dream, late nights and tight budgets, and dreamers have always had tough obstacles to overcome in pursuit of their ideals. However, we feel in the way of getting startup money for a permanent farm, the deck in the banking world right now is impossibly stacked against us. And I'm excited to have the opportunity to share some of my story and dream with you, our legislators, in hopes that HB 2700 and other bills like it in the future will be implemented and come to the rescue of the oft-forgotten farmers. I was amazed to learn how many children think food originates in the back rooms of a supermarket. All farming requires labor, consistency, and for the most part, a life of the acceptance of living with modest means. My generation is in it for the satisfaction of the work and the health and happiness it provides to others, not the money. Money is a necessity, though, for getting a farm up and running or for rehabbing a neglected one. My partner and I are lucky enough to have a community surrounding us that is supportive, active, and skilled. They give us positive feedback we need to keep up our morale and provide us wonderful ideas for new niches in the market we may be able to expand in. At the same time, we experience frustration as we sort of claw our way inch by inch through each step of building our livelihood. We balance raising kids and running a household with other non-agricultural jobs and our farming. We want to be able to farm full-time. That's our dream. Our dream and passion. Not only do we love to grow food, but I'll toot our horns and say we're really good at it. But in chasing our dream, we're living on food stamps and occasionally the goodwill of churches in order to feed ourselves, and the irony there is really deep to me. We have wonderful carpenters, mechanics, and laborers in our extended community that are just waiting for us to have the means to get materials to come and build us chicken coops and cold frames. We have someone who will provide us fruit and nut trees to get an orchard started. We also have a robust and growing demand for our CSA. We even have folks just waiting for us to give them the word to come live on acreage with us and work for us and with us to build a thriving permanent farm while helping us meet monthly loan payments or mortgage payments. And we're a down payment away from saying yes to all of these people and wonderful ideas. But what bank these days is just going to take a chance on young farmers like us? And that's why SB 2700 is so important. We've crunched the numbers and maybe just $20,000 away from being able to purchase up to 20 acres, which is our ideal farm size. And that may be through a lease-to-own scenario or through some kind of loan set. But once that's in place, we have a family of supporters just ready to descend and get to work. So I'm here on behalf of myself, my partner, our children, and all of those community members that have given us positive feedback and are supporting us every step of the way, and who would also like to be involved in what we're doing, and we'd love to be able to offer jobs to some of them in the future for what they do best. So thanks for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you very, very much for your comments. Questions for either of our witnesses? Yes, please, Representative Reardon.
Mr. Chair, just thank you so much for coming in, because one of the things I've been curious about is what's the face of a young farmer look like? And you both helped me see that. I mean, it's really important to know who would be supporting with this bill. But where did you learn to farm?
You want to answer that?
Go ahead.
I grew up on a 3.5 lots in the city, a pretty large lot for the middle of Portland, and we did extensive gardening and kept bees. But after that, and after I was out on my own, it was just little by little finding places to live. I lived in Corvallis for a while, where I had a 1,200 square foot garden, and then I moved and had a 1,500 square foot garden. So it's been this slow transition from home gardener to farmer. And when we got this, the 0.93 acres, which is our biggest chunk we're working with now, we feel like that was our graduation from market gardener to farmer. So it's been just slow, step by step, learning, taking workshops, picking the brains of more experienced farmers in the business that we know, and we hope to keep growing little by little.
Yeah, and we kind of started, just did trial and error. I mean, like I mentioned, we weren't really planning on being farmers, but we kind of met the right people at the right time, and we were fortunate enough to already have the property, and I mean we fell in love with it, and it's, I mean I think we've come a long ways, and I actually now sit on the board of the East Multnomah Solar Water Conservation District, and you know there's just a great farming community in Oregon, and we hope we can make it grow.
It has to be a labor of love, and I look forward to supporting you.
Thank you.
Additional questions or comments? I want to thank you both very, very, very much. I think you are the perfect spokespeople for this bill. You laid out some of the precise reasons why it's necessary. The fact that it's difficult to get loans if you're going to be farming, the fact that commercial loans are more expensive, borrowed land, land that you have put a lot of effort into and are likely to lose in the near future, the high capital cost to get into farming. So thank you so much for your statements, and your passion for what you're pursuing is palpable, and it is a wonderful statement on behalf of all the others who would like to join you in agriculture. So thank you so much for your statements today.
Thank you.
I'd like to note, too, that Rebecca Roth has requested that her name be noted as submitted a testimony as well.
I think she might want to come up.
Or did she want to testify? Yes, oh, please do. I'm sorry. I misunderstood.
Okay. I'm only submitting it verbally.
Okay, that's wonderful. Welcome to our committee.
Right. I was just listening, and Representative Witt, and I'm not sure that how to do this, but anyway, everybody, good morning. I wanted to talk about what I have seen just over my lifetime of things that drive up costs. And since it's a truth out of the Bible that says that the borrower is the lender's slave, when a farmer has to go into debt to start his farming or to keep his farming going, he's the slave of those he owes money to. And so it is neat to be able to access money, but then you're trapped. And what would be a better thing is to cut costs in other ways. I think I've watched over the years our government make costs go up for everybody in Oregon. And it would really help to get some of the regulations and the taxes lowered. That would help the costs to go down. Years ago, we passed a law that said that you couldn't have kids work in the fields. When I was growing up, kids always worked in the fields. Then Oregon went to having, you had to pay minimum wage. And back when I used to work in the fields, it used to be that you got paid by the pound. And so it was a direct relationship of how much work you put out was how much you got paid for, rather than minimum wage. I think it's very detrimental to farmers to have to pay minimum wage because it's not connected to the amount of product that they get that they have to put onto the open market. Farmers markets are great, but we have to also produce farm products to sell overseas, and when our taxes and our labor costs are so large that we can't put them out into the open market in other countries or wherever our labor costs are so big, and all the side issues, like we want government sponsored health care, so then we have to pay higher taxes for that. We have all the land things that we go through. I just talked to the farmer down the road from us, and they just spent $10,000 paying to bureaucrats just to figure out where their property lines were. $10,000 to bureaucrats. That should have been something that was figured out in a day, but it took several years to figure it out. There are things that our government is doing to farmers that have nothing to do with them going out and getting a good loan. It has to do with government getting off our backs. Another famous quote by Supreme Court Justice Marshall: "The power to tax is the power to destroy." I'd like to leave that with you. I just watched Nike come and grovel at your feet to get out of having to pay taxes that everybody else is still going to have to pay for. George Washington said, "Arbitrary power is best built on the ruins of liberty, to licentiousness." Licentiousness is the giving yourself license. You give yourself license to take power. You give yourself license to whatever. We need to get back to having our country work on law that is set, that we're not trying to make certain people better than other people, or, you know, all this stuff that's going on right now, the corruption that's going on in our government. I don't like it. I don't want it. I want to see it come under wraps again. Let's begin working well in our government, serving the people.
Thank you very much, Ms. Rod. I think you'll find that the members of this committee are trying to do just that. Appreciate your comments. Is there anyone else, before I close the hearing, who would like to speak on House Bill 2700? Please come forward. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Witt and members of the committee. I'm Peggy Salas, and Peggy Salas Woolsey, and I have testified many times on behalf of Tax Fairness Oregon. This morning, I'm not testifying on behalf of Tax Fairness Oregon. I'm testifying as a concerned Oregon citizen. For the first 10 years of my adult life, I earned my living by being a farmer. The first 5 years that I spent in Oregon, my only income was from agricultural-related activity. My crop was horses. I managed to earn a profit 3 out of 5 years. And so I feel that the one thing in reading this bill is that it appears to want to incentivize the activities of food production. And I would want to make sure then that this bill is specific to those food producers by specifying in there that these loans are to go to the producers of food and not nursery people or grass seed farmers or horse farmers. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions or comments? I'm not seeing any. Thank you very much for your comments.
You're welcome.
Last and final call for House Bill 2700. Anyone out there? All right. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2700 and request that the Department of Agriculture and the Oregon Business Development Department meet briefly with myself and our two co-chairs following this hearing. And anyone else that's interested in this bill is welcome to chat with us as well after the meeting. With that, if I could please have the witness sign-in sheet for our next bills. Close the public hearing on House Bill 2700, and I am going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2244. Beth, would you please tell us briefly what that bill is about?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2244 repeals statutes governing grain inspections at warehouses and transit points by the Oregon Department of Agriculture.
Repeal law, that's different. Very good. I'd like to call forward, please, Lisa Hansen and Jim Kramer from Department of Ag.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to visit with you. And if I might, I'm going to talk about the three bills that you'll be hearing this morning from the department as a suite initially, and then I can walk you through each one of them. Those bills would be House Bill 2244, House Bill 2245, and House Bill 2246. Simply put, these are housekeeping bills for the department.
Lisa, would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, I'm sorry. For the record, Lisa Hansen, Deputy Director with the Department of Agriculture. And with me is Jim Kramer, our Director of Market Access and Certification.
Good morning.
So in a review of the agency's administrative rules and statutes during the interim, we've done some significant housekeeping. We went through and reviewed our administrative rules and did repeal of rules that were obsolete, programs that were no longer in place, and cleaned those up. The final part of some of those actions is coming before the legislature this session in a suite of bills that are simply that. They're the repeal of obsolete programs or some modifications in programs that need to be completed. So to House Bill 2244, it simply repeals the statutes related to grain inspection by the Oregon Department of Agriculture. Some years ago, we had a grain inspection program. It closed down in about 2001-2-ish in Pendleton. There were other providers of services that were more cost competitive at the time. And so we have not used the statute or this program for some time, and it leaves our grain warehouse program in place but repeals those statutes relating to inspection of grain. So with that, I'm happy to walk you through the bill section by section if you would like, or answer any questions.
Are there any committee members that would like a section-by-section analysis of this bill? I'm not seeing an overwhelming consensus
here. I like the repeal part.
Yeah. Well, we get to do that often.
But thank you so much for that offer. At a later time, we may take you up on it. Are there any questions or comments for our panel members? But I'm not seeing any. This is a very lively bill, obviously, and we certainly appreciate your comments. Let's see here. I'm not seeing anything further. I need to just close the
You close the hearing, you can do the work session. Mm-hmm.
Work session, get it out.
I think afterwards.
Okay.
All right. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2244. And I am going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2245. And our first witnesses are already with us. Welcome back to our committee. Please proceed.
Thank you. So, House Bill 2245 is a continuation of our previous discussion. It simply repeals the requirement for a certification for transportation of bulk onions within 50 miles, I believe, or more. And this is one of those programs, again, has been on the books for a very long time. The history in the department, we're not even sure why it was on the books, if you would like to be perfectly honest. And so we haven't issued these certificates for some time. And again, it's a matter of cleaning it up and getting rid of an obsolete section of the law.
Thank you very much. This one actually exceeds the length of testimony of the previous bill. And we are very grateful for that. Are there any questions or comments? We're going to pass the section-by-section analysis of this one as well.
We're happy to oblige.
Thank you very much. And if there are no further questions or comments, I am going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2245. Thank you. And I am going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2246.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is the final bill in our suite of bills before you today that, again, is a repeal of statutes for an obsolete program. It repeals the statutes relating to mandatory inspection of dried prunes. At one point in time, there was a very robust prune industry in Oregon. Over time, it has diminished and become very small. If growers are desire inspection, they can do that through a voluntary program within our department, and there is no longer a need for the mandatory requirements for inspection. So again, pretty simple, straightforward bill, we believe, that repeals an obsolete section of the law.
Thank you very much. Yes, Representative Krieger. Don't ask for a section by section, please, Representative.
Our record.
This bill is not going to hurt prune pickers, is it? Ever watch him pick them? Watch Senator Cruz do it, the thing that shakes the machine. Unbelievable what comes down and stuff. It's amazing the things that one time this building or somebody decided we had to have. I just wonder if 50 years from now, they look at some of the foolishness we're doing, they're going to be repealing it too. I hope so.
Well, we're keeping our fingers crossed, Representative.
Anything further for our witnesses? Yes, Representative Thompson.
I congratulate you on a threefer here. I mean, it's not often, in my experience, we actually get rid of old and worthless statutes.
Yes.
We just build on them. You know, so keep it, you know, bring us 150 more of these that need to get off the books, and maybe some of the other agencies will follow suit.
Thank you.
All right. Any other good-natured, good-humored comments about the...
What didn't you ask?
Representative Reardon, not to miss an opportunity here.
Are there people that have been in violation of the statutes, and is there a penalty associated with that, and could we collect additional revenue?
Oh, my. Oh, my.
Mr. Kramer, would you like to respond?
Love to. For the record, Jim Kramer, Director of the Market Access Certification, and Mr. Chair and Representative Reardon, no,
Searching for funding these days.
Well, we certainly appreciate your appearance and making sure that we remain regular here. So with that, we'll dismiss the witnesses and thank you ever so much for your for your testimony. All right. Who said that we can't have fun in House Ag? With that, I am going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2246, and I am going to open a work session on House Bill 2244, and that was the grain bill.
Do you have that motion script?
I have the motion script right here. And the chair recognizes Representative McCune.
Chair Witt, I move House Bill 2244 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be placed on the consent calendar.
Thank you very much. Committee members, Representative McCune moves House Bill 2244 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the measure be placed on the consent calendar. Are there any objections? Is there any discussion? Seeing none, so ordered. Thank you very much, members. I will close the work session on House Bill 2244, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2245. And with that, I recognize Representative McCune. Yeah.
Oh, Chair Witt, I move House Bill 2245 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be placed on the consent calendar, please.
Thank you very much. Committee members, Representative McEwen moves House Bill 2245 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the measure be placed on the consent calendar. Is there any discussion? Excuse me. Is there any discussion on that motion? Seeing or hearing none, is there any objection to the motion? Seeing none, so ordered. Thank you very much. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2245. And I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2246. Committee members, I want to share with you some of the angst, some of the anxiety that I went through last night in studying this bill. And I think this bill is different than the other two, mainly in that it deals with prunes as opposed to grain and onions. And I am convinced that this bill, because of the great concern that that I have received in letters, email, correspondence, phone calls, does not lend itself to the consent calendar.
I'm going to suggest that.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Klim should carry it.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Krieger. I agree. So as I struggled to try and fall asleep last night, deciding who among us on this committee would carry the 2013 prune bill to the hallowed floor of our chamber, I decided that in order to allay some of the concerns of senior Oregonians, that it would take a regular Joe to carry this bill. And in this instance, perhaps a regular Jeff. And with that in mind, I believe that we're going to need someone who... Well, anyways, we'll hold that until the motion comes.
Sure, he's going to vote no now.
Vice Chair McCune.
Chair Witt, I move House Bill 2246 to the floor with a due pass recommendation, please.
Thank you very much, Vice Chair. Vice Chair McCune moves House Bill 2246 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. The clerk will please call the roll.
Representative Krieger.
Aye.
Representative Reardon.
I vote aye, and also acknowledge that I would be honored to carry this bill to the floor and represent the Ag and Natural Resources Committee. I know the importance and how prunes have helped keep Oregon moving for years. And
can I change my vote?
It's not.
I haven't voted yet, so
vice for me.
Representative Thompson.
Aye.
Representative Unger.
Aye.
Representative Whitfield.
Aye.
Vice Chair Esquivel.
Aye.
Vice Chair McEwen.
Honored to vote aye.
Chair Witt.
Votes aye. Having received the constitutional majority, House Bill 2246 is passed to the House floor. Thank you very much, committee members. I would like to assign one of the more senior members of the freshman caucus of this committee to carry this bill to the floor, Representative Reardon. And may the force be with you as you prepare for this to carry the bill.
Thank you for entrusting me with this honor.
Thank you very much. With that, I close the public hearing on House Bill 2246. Is there anything for the good of the order? Beth, without putting you on the spot, can you give us a rundown on coming events? Hold on just a minute, folks. I apologize for...
So, members, there are four bills up for... public hearing and possible work session on Thursday, House Bill 2257, House Bill 2031, 2233, and 2259, a couple of water bills, one that deals with the Department of State Lands and Mineral Rights, and then a bill that would modify laws governing the seizure of abandoned vessels.
Thank you very much. Anything further from the committee? Seeing none, we stand adjourned. Thank you very, very much.
See you later, Victor.